Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone again to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we're going to be discussing some issues as relates to our communities. One of the things we want to do tonight with our guests is to talk about what's going on in the neck of our woods. That's old school talk from the African community. I thank the people that we have on today. They have some interesting activities and programs and events and have experienced some interesting things within the last month or so. Well, we believe that the information that they will provide to you today will become information that you can use in order to improve your lives and get a better understanding of our people. So in the context of this thing, what's going on in the neck of your woods, we're going to bring in Brother Bamboji Shango and Brother Haki Amra. They're going to be giving some information, dealing with some of the works that they are engaging in, and we want to inform you of these activities, which we believe is very important. First and foremost, to our brothers Bamboji and Haki, again, we welcome you to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Starting with, we're going to start back home in Africa. Brother Haki, last 30 days you have had an interesting experience in terms of going back home. Can you share some of your experiences with our audience, where you went, and what were some of the things you learned and observed from your trip?
Yeah, I recently got back from South Africa. I spent a couple of days in Johannesburg and flew down to Cape Town. But interesting, you know, history is a very good barometer in terms of, you know, predicting the future. One of the things that was very ironic in Cape Town is that, you know, around 6 o'clock, at that point, all the workers, particularly African workers in Cape Town, are heading to the buses and to the trains to head back to the townships. Now, for those listeners who don't know, the townships historically were set up to segregate the African masses, you know, from the white colonial settlers in South Africa. So what happened is those townships are still in place, and they're the most wretched, most horrible places in which people live. Now, the thing is that irrespective of your class, irrespective of how much money you earn a year, irrespective of your job title, that the townships are for all Africans. So even in the context of townships, you have the slums, then you have areas that's a little better than the slums, then you have areas that's a little better than those areas. But nonetheless, but you still had a segregation, and unfortunately, the mindset of the white folks in South Africa hasn't changed whatsoever. They're still very antagonistic toward the aspirations and the rights of the African masses. In fact, a lot of the stereotypes you hear related to as it relates to African people in America also resonate over there in South Africa. For example, a lot of the Africans who have jobs over there are Africans from different countries, not the indigenous South Africans, but Africans from Namibia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, and those kind of places. So the thought being that indigenous South Africans are, in fact, lazy, they're stupid, they don't want to work, so on, all the kind of racist stereotypes that are indicative, you know, of colonial regimes. Now, I got an opportunity to talk to some political prisoners in South Africa who formerly belonged to the African National Congress, ANC. And one of the things I was surprised to find out is that the whole question in terms of the land question has never been addressed in South Africa. My understanding, according to these brothers, was that predicated on discussions as a prelude, no discussion would take place with respect to the land question. It wasn't even allowed to be raised in terms of the point that they decided to free Mandela. One of the things that would happen here, though, there's much more respect for Robert Sobukwe, who headed the Pan-African Congress, in terms of his idea that, you know, that this problem in terms of, you know, African liberation has to reside with African people and have to make a decision in terms of, you know, bringing about that needed change. So it's good to hear that at least that is a discussion, you know, in South Africa. More and more people, particularly young people, are gravitating more toward Robert Sobukwe's position as opposed to the ANC position. So it's a very, very good discourse that's taking place in South Africa with respect to that particular question. But nonetheless, I was just so unfortunate that such a beautiful country is still bogged down with, you know, with the past and these racial attitudes in which, you know, they when you're in the elevator and they get on the elevator, they see you, they get scared. Like, and I asked one white couple, I said, what do you think I'm going to do to you? You know, because they were scared to get on a British couple, they were afraid to get on the elevator. So the assumption is that, you know, based upon skin color, that somehow you're a suspect or somehow you're a criminal. And it's just the same, unfortunately, same nonsense in the 21st century.
How much has the attitudes of the so-called Europeans who are living in Zambia, South Africa, how much that type of attitude is different from the kind of attitude you may experience for Europeans who are living in America as it comes to this race relationship question? In terms of interacting with each other, that you may have
observed. Well, there was. I didn't see any interaction between Africans and the Europeans, South Africans over there. There were no interactions with them. But my own experience with the white folks over there has been one of, you know, I think if I was indigenous in South Africa, I'd probably be alienated. Because their position was based on your skin color, assuming they assume that because your skin color, they assume you're South African, and so their behavior towards you is very, very clear in terms of, you know, some hostilities they have against you simply because of the color of your skin. So I think there is a parallel between, you know, the attitudes of most white folks in America and the white folks in South Africa. And like I said before, the attitudes of white folks in South Africa is still the same. They still cross the street when you see them. You ask them a question, they run like you're going to do something to them. They come to the elevator, they look all around, you know, like somehow, trouble is imminent, you know. So I think it's pretty much the same kind of mentality. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like the brother talked about, is the land question and the fact that, you know, Africans won't be respected unless you deal with the question of land, because as it stands now, most of the wealth of South Africa still resides, and 90% of the wealth of South Africa still resides in the hand of the white minority. And so until the government does some terms of addressing that, then I don't see the situation changing in terms of relationship that exists between, you know, white folk, Africans, and South Africa. And unfortunately, the African National Congress seems, particularly President Zuma, appear to be content with the way the status quo. So I don't think this is the struggle in terms of, you know, Africa, you know, autonomy or Africa's struggle for self-determination, I think is ongoing.
You said you had a chance, I believe, to visit Robben Island and talk to some of the political prisons over there. Can you just tell the audience a little bit about that particular experience?
Yeah, I went to Robben Island where they formerly held Mandela, and they also held Robert Sobukwe, who represented the PAC. But the brothers I talked to in terms of who was still part of ANC, who was locked up with Mandela, they're very, very angry about the land question. In fact, they felt that the ANC actually sold out in terms of refusing to raise that question around the question of land and all that it represents. I think that they understood that the man's been locked up for 17 years. At that point, they had no discussions. And so, therefore, you know, I mean, you know, even though there are those who take a position that, well, they really didn't have any choice, their hands were tied, so they had to do what they had to do, simply because the African masses were in a position to actually confront the white colonial government regime over in South Africa, that they simply had to capitulate. But these brothers took a position that was crap, that was bull. That, in fact, the same military structure that exists, Ukhonto-we Sizwe, that exists, you know, prior to those talks was still in place at the time they held those talks. So they thought that was BS. So those brothers were pretty angry, pretty adamant that this land question has to be addressed. And they're content, and they're adamant that they're going to push this issue in terms of land question, even if they have to end up back in prison. So that's basically what happened in terms of Robben Island.
Okay, we're going to alert our audience today that we are listening to Africa on the Move. They can feel free to call in at 679. Call in at 323-679-0841. Today our theme is what's going on in the nick of our woods. We have some guests with us today, and they are sharing some of their experiences and some of the activities that they are working on, and we're hoping to share this information with you so you can participate, but more importantly, so you can get a better understanding what the people are doing and where the people are moving. So right now, we're going to make our next transition to our brother Bamboshi. Tonight, Bamboshi will be representing the African Wedding Association, and they have a major upcoming event coming up, and we want to inform our community on this particular event. Brother Bamboshi, will you talk about a little bit about African Wedding Association and why y'all choosing to take a Freedom Ride Travel Challenge to Cuba?
Yes, but before I do that, I'd just like to follow up on some stuff that Brother Haki just said, because in
the
interest of open disclosure, I must say that I'm a member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. And I'm glad that Brother Haki raised the land question, because for our party, it is clear that land is the basis of revolution. Malcolm told you that. Malcolm said, revolutions are based on land. If you're not talking about land, you're not talking about revolution. So when you look at our brothers in South Africa, and Brother Haki said that the majority of the land and the resources are still owned by the white people who owned it on the apartheid, then it seems clear that we may have been duped into thinking that there was a revolution in South Africa. Zimbabwe has shown us the way. And in Zimbabwe, as much fuss as you hear about the Africans, and especially the Africans who fought against the racist Rhodesian regime in Zimbabwe, taking the land back, no white farmer per se, well, no, that's not true. There have been deaths of maybe two or three white farmers. But you hear more about the fact that the Africans are taking the land in Zimbabwe. That's why the United States today have an embargo on Zimbabwe. So land is very, very important. Thanks, Brother Haki, for bringing that up. I should also thank you for raising the question of political prisoners in South Africa, because today there are still numerous prisoners from the PAC who fought against apartheid who are still being held in Zimbabwe, and they must be freed. They must be freed. Now, to get back to the question that Brother Lee rose, the African Awareness Association has taken a Travel Challenge Black History Cruise to Cuba in December. This cruise will be our ability to take our people to introduce them to some more of our people who are living under neocolonialism in Cuba all the way up until 1958 when they had the Cuban Revolution. We should encourage everybody to come with us on this tour, because this is the only way you will ever get the truth about Cuba. You can never get the truth about Cuba in the U.S. media. Never. The tour will be in December, December 21st, and we'll be leaving from the Baltimore, Washington area and returning in January the 3rd to the Baltimore, Washington area. Brother Lee, you can fill us in some more on this trip, because you also have the information, but the African Awareness Association is an association that has taken numerous trips and countless amount of people to Cuba since 1994, I believe. And I have been going with the African Awareness Association to Cuba since 1999. And I will tell you that it's an experience you will not get by going as a tourist. Is that right, Brother Lee?
That's correct, and we'd like to just make some adjustments in terms of the logistics. The trip will take place on December 18th through January 3rd. And one of the features of the trip is you'll be going to two places for one price. You will spend an additional 2 days in Cancun, Mexico, as well as in Cuba. And in Cuba, there will be a 4-day jazz festival that is a part of this package. But more importantly, you will go to Cuba because you will get to see and live and feel the Cuban Revolution and how it has impacted its people and made them a better people. And more importantly, what can we learn from them to make our lives here around the world a better place to live? So you couldn't be at a better place at a better time in bringing in the New Year than being in Cuba. So we'd like to tell and encourage our brothers and sisters, again, as Brother Bambo stated, come and see Cuba for yourself. And if you're interested in going, you just need to give us a call. You can reach the African Wellness Association at African_Awareness_Association@Yahoo, or call us at 804-549-7742 or Bamboshi at
202-714-9435.
Okay, Bamboshi, one of the things about the trip, Bamboshi, I would like for you to articulate to the people, what has been the historical relationship between the Cuban Revolution and the struggles of African people at home and abroad? So you can just give people a sense of why this relationship historically has been an important one and must continue to be an important one of support.
Well, I would say that for Africans in the U.S. and in every corner of the world, it is unlikely that you cannot find anywhere within the last 50 to 60 years that your people have not been aided by Cuba and the Cuban Revolution. Today, Cuba is sending medical personnel throughout the world, and they are also training medical personnel from Africa, the Caribbean, South and Central America. And just the impact of this alone is so magnitude that it's unbelievable that in many places where you have doctors who would not go because the places are way in the rural communities and they didn't feel they could make the kind of money that they could make in the cities, you have Cuban doctors and indigenous doctors that are trained in Cuba working with the people there. Recently, Cuba entered an agreement with Brazil to send doctors to Brazil. And the doctors that existed in Brazil already voiced a concern. Their concern was that the Cuban doctors would treat people that they would not normally treat. You begin to understand the magnitude of the effect of being able to send armies of doctors all over the world to really help people, to make them live longer, make their life better, versus sending the military all over the world like the U.S. does to kill people. In Cuba, they have Operation Miracle, which they've engaged in through Venezuela and with Venezuela, that is did laser operation on cataracts in the eyes of numerous people in South and Central America and the Caribbean. Today, there are many, many people who can now see because of this operation. This operation will cost hundreds of dollars in their country or in the U.S., but because of Cuba and Venezuela, these operations are being done for free, throughout South America, throughout the Caribbean. And it was even offered to poor people in the United States, but because of the backlash of the right-wing Cubans in Miami, that offer fell through. However, there was one lady out of Chicago who went and had the operation. She was a bus driver, a single mother, and she was about to lose her job because she couldn't afford the operation in Chicago to remove the cataract. So the Venezuelan government brought her to Venezuela, did the operation, Now she's back in Chicago. Her job is secure, and that's how they roll. That's what they do. The Cuban government, the Venezuelan government, has aided Africans and other people, especially people of color, throughout the world. We owe them a debt of gratitude. We in the United States have the responsibility to fight against this immoral, illegal, and racist blockade and travel ban on Cuba. And one way of doing that is traveling with us to Cuba in December.
Okay, we'll get the information numbers again where you can call in at 804-549-7492 in Bamboche.
It's 202-714-9435.
Okay, to our listening audience, we're going to be coming to you in a few minutes. We've been holding for a while. We'll be calling off your last four numbers. But we'll go to our next guest. We have with us as people who have listened to this program before, they have heard this young lady. Her name is Katie Fulton. And we'd like for her to talk a little bit and give us an update on what's going on with her son and her struggle as relates to they're trying to incarcerate another young African male for no reason. Because of the fact that we believe that he has shown that he has potential to be a great servant to humanity, that there are founding reasons to deny him access to a normal life. So, Sister Katie, can you talk a little bit and give us an update on what's going on at Fulton?
Yes, sir. I'm here. My son, Michael, is really and truly struggling right now for his freedom in Colorado. He is a college graduate, and he grew up in the state of Colorado. But he has been charged with some very bogus charges based on his computer. The Douglas County, a county we have never lived in, indicates that they have confiscated his computer, and they are going to use his computer information or information that they said was on his computer to file charges against him. These felony charges carry years in prison. So right now, we are struggling for legal representation, and we are struggling to give Michael a chance to defend himself. They are saying in their files that these charges are called sexual exploitation of children based on the fact that the pictures of children were filed on his computer. And this came to his computer, they said, by file sharing. He was not aware of these pictures being on his computer, and he was not aware that Douglas County law enforcement officials had tapped into his computer and said that they were just looking around one day, and they happened to find that this computer had some information being streamed onto it, and because it had my son's name on it through Comcast, then they think that they can arrest him for that. So we are struggling to understand all of what the digital heir is capable of doing, where we do know that Michael has not hurt any children, he's not exploited a child, he's not physically harmed anyone. He's only trying very hard to defend himself in court now in Douglas County to say that he's innocent. He has not hurt anyone, has no desire to hurt anyone.
Mr. Fuller, I'm going to stop you right there. Actually, can you talk to the people, for those who never heard the case, how did this whole thing begin? What you had to endure in terms of how did they seize the computer? How was they able, what did they do when it came to your house? I mean, the people needed to give
they came into my home. Yes, they came into my home in the early part of April with gun drawn. Police officers from Douglas County, 8 to 10 police officers came in early morning with their guns drawn in my face and ordered me outside in my nightgown. And they said that they wanted me to stay outside until they could complete a search. And it was cold. I told them that I needed to have something on, but they said that I would have to stay outside or be arrested. So I complied. I walked outside in my nightgown, and I stayed outside. They did not present me with a search warrant, and they confiscated all of the computers, all of the phone, all of the cash and cards, anything that had technology associated with it, they took it. They took it. So I had no way of getting help. My computers were gone. The telephones were gone. The cameras and cash and cards were all gone, taken. And they said we probably won't get them back. We won't get them back until after the trial is over.
Oh, so your money were taken along with other stuff. Yeah,
personal things were taken from my home. My son was not home when they did this. He was not in the house. They know he was not in the house.
And there was no property warrant when initially they came to your house to enter to your house. Is that correct?
Right. They did not give me a search warrant when they came into my house. They came into my house with a pass key. They'd gotten the key from the property manager, and they came in with that key.
Presently, legally, what kind of problems are you having with the legal system in terms of trying to get adequate representation, and what kind of costs? And then briefly and quickly tell the people, how can they support you?
I think that it would be great if someone who has a listening audience would be able to support. I would really appreciate it, because we have been trying to secure a representative for Michael, and it's hard to find an attorney right now because some of the attorneys looked at the case and said they are familiar with how the digital heir, during the digital heir, could use your computer or your computer information can be used against you. They are familiar with that, and they would like to represent Michael, but they are asking for $25,000 to organize and get his defense in place. We don't have that kind of money. So if your audience is able to make a donation, we would appreciate it. They could send donations to Post Office Box 58, Englewood, Colorado, 80151. Or they could call 720-499-5146. I would be glad to share more information about my son's experience, because it has really and truly been difficult.
Can I raise one question?
Yes, go ahead, Bambushi.
Could she explain why she thinks that they targeted her son? Is he a political activist?
I have been involved for years. His mom. I am. I have been a political activist for years. I have written, and I have organized, I have marched, and I have been active since back in the 60s. I'm an old woman. And I have been working on other people's behalf for years and years. I grew up in the South, and I understand the struggle. I participated in SNCC. And I understand, I went to the segregated South, so when I became an adult, I migrated north like many black families did, looking for better opportunities for work and school. So I migrated north with my family, and I finished my education in the north. But I found that segregation and prejudice environment was everywhere. It was not just in the South. But what we're experiencing now, I think my son is a target because of my activities. I also have a case that's presently on file in federal court in Colorado. It's employment discrimination. And my son was with me in federal court for that hearing on the 22nd of March. And he was being observed by law enforcement at that time. But on the 22nd of March, we did not know that they had already put in place that they were going to raid down on us at least 2 weeks later, and this happened on the 4th of April. So, yes, my son is a target. He's a target. If they can't destroy me, they intend to destroy him.
Okay, we're going to alert our listening audience that if you don't hear the entirety of this program, we're going to go over. You can always go to our archive by dialing or type in www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa on the move, and you'll be able to hear this whole program in its entirety. Right there, I believe we have a caller on the line. We have a caller. The last three numbers is 3380-3380. Question or comment, caller? You're on the line. Yes, caller 3380-3330. My correction. Caller 3330. Your question or comment, please. Okay, I guess my caller don't have nothing to say. Well, we can go to Brother Haki. In terms of your trip to Azania, South Africa, what is the major thing that stood out stood out for you the most, the positive thing and the negative thing that you took from this that you need to share with our people?
I think the most positive thing was the fact that despite the massive poverty, the eloquence and the sense of security, the sense of self-esteem that the people carried themselves with, despite their conditions, it was good to see people, despite these horrendous conditions, know who they are, understand that they're dealing with situations beyond their control and not to internalize it. So the kind of aggression that normally that manifests itself in the West in terms of African people killing African people, the hostility of African people against other African people, didn't exist there. The people got along together, they loved and respected one another. So I was surprised, and this was across tribal lines. So Zulus, Xhosas, didn't matter. I mean, across tribal lines, people got together and respected one another, and they always respected, and the amount of respect was just tremendous. The only negative thing, I think, is the fact that it's very difficult, at least for me, to go to the townships and see the magnitude of the poverty, and that nobody should be subjected to that when it don't have to be. So that's probably the most negative part, but that was far outweighed by the positive in terms of the way the people interact with one another, the respect and love they have for one another. So that was very, very, I think that's something that's foremost in my mind.
And to our brother Ben Bushy, can you please, to our audience again, why it's significant to go to Cuba and create a relationship with Cuba?
Well, it's important to go to Cuba in light of all of the issues that are being raised today, especially these issues of survival, sustainability, the issue of new development, the issue of independence, the issue of democracy, all of these issues that are hidden. The embargo on Cuba was placed on Cuba in 1961-62 by John Kennedy. And this embargo basically says that if you trade with Cuba or if you travel to Cuba, you risk being targeted by the Office of Foreign Asset Control, OFAC. And OFAC has the ability to fine you for doing this or to imprison you. Now, in the past, since 2007, there have basically been no prosecutions of people who have broken the travel ban. And today, Cuba is one of the greatest travel destinations for many people from the U.S., over 500,000 people from the U.S. traveled to Cuba last year with or without a license, and this year that figure is scheduled to triple. So this is the perfect time to go. It's the time when Cuba is at its height in transition. It's about to change, and there is questions about what will happen after the government in Cuba, the president of Cuba, and his brother passes. And therefore, we need to see for ourselves. We need to talk to people in Cuba and see what they're saying, because you will not get this from the media in the USA. You will not get this information from Fox News. You will not get this information even by possibly looking it up on Google, because as the sister was explaining about the case with her son, today the NSA is not only spying on Americans, but they are placing information on your computer to determine who you talk to and who you don't talk to, and they're also in the strategic position because of this to do what they used to do in the old days, what people used to say, plant. Police would stop you and you'd be innocent, and they would plant a weapon on you, plant drugs on you or plant some kind of contraband on you. Today, they don't have to stop you. They don't have to physically approach you. They can stay at a NASA station somewhere and plant evidence in your computer and then bust your door down at 3 o'clock in the morning and arrest you for something that they put on your computer, that kind of stuff. So it's good to travel. An old black philosopher in South Carolina used to say, the more you go, the more you know. That's philosophy. It's good to travel because you need to know for yourself. You cannot take the word of people who are telling you that this is this and this is that today because half of them are lying. That's why we must go to people. Hey,
again, give us the number where they can call you for those who are interested in going. And we said earlier the trip is from December 18th to January 3rd. And you can email the African Awareness Association by emailing at African_Awareness_Association, or you can call 804-549-7492 or
202-714-9435.
And to find out more information about Cuba and the whole Pan-African movement, there is a website that we all support, and that's the website of the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC. You can go to, you can dial www.a-aprp-gc.org. We advocate all just for freedom-loving people to go and check out their website. They have a host of information, and they are an excellent organization to take a look at if you understand the necessity for to be organized and look for an organization to work with. And in closing out, Ms. Fulton, can you give us a last summary of why they should come to aid of your son, Michael Fulton, and how can they do that, Ms. Fulton?
Yes, please. We are asking that you send donations to Post Office Box 58, Englewood, Englewood, Colorado, 80151, or you can call 720-499-5146, or you can also send your information to Save Our Sons 2013 at gmail.com, and we will respond. Your help would be very much appreciated. We are struggling to save this young man's life, his freedom, and his future.
Okay, we'd like to thank our listening audience for participating and allowing us the opportunity to come in their homes today to listen to our program. Tonight the theme was what's going on in Neck of Our Woods. We hope that this information that we have provided for you tonight is information that you can use and maybe you become more aware of the present things that are going on in our community. And we hope that you will respond appropriately in terms of supporting these activities and our young brother, Michael Fulton, who needs your help. Until next time, this is a bi-weekly show. You can hear Africa on the Move every other Sunday at 6 p.m. at the same time, the same station. Until next time, we'd like for you to remember that without information, you cannot think, and without organization, you cannot think clearly. This has been a production of Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we thank you, and we'll see you on the next program. For Let's Move to Go Forward, Arrow, and Backwards Devil. We thank you.
Thank you.